The method.
Ideas. Method became
unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
Without doubt. Do you call it unsound method?
I don't see any method at all.
Hello and welcome to Unsound Methods with me, Jamie Batchin.
And me, Lachlan Bloom.
So if this is the first time you're listening to Unsound Methods, this is a podcast where we speak to other writers of literary fiction about their craft, approach and technique.
And in this episode, we speak to Sophie McIntosh, who is the author of The Water Cure and The Blue Ticket. We talked about her journey to become a full-time writer and the importance of music and having a playlist to go along with each project.
Yeah, she also spoke about the importance of tricking yourself into getting the words down and what you really want to write through various processes and ways of just getting your brain in that mindset. She's got an interesting approach, I think, to a lot of the writers that we've spoken to. This hasn't really come up before, but she writes a sort of ever-evolving synopsis and uses that as the sort of structure on which to base her writing.
Not something we've covered before in the podcast. So without any further ado, we give you Sophie McIntosh. Could you describe a little of how you first started writing seriously in focusing on fiction?
Yeah, so I don't know, it's such a cliche, isn't it, to be like, I really liked to write for years and years. When I was a teenager, I was kind of writing a lot of poetry and stuff. And yeah, I went to uni and I did English with creative writing at Warwick. And then I guess because that was being around people who were also writing and stuff and learning a bit more about writing, it kind of made me think a bit more seriously about it. And I kind of didn't, I don't know, there's like, because there's no kind of career path into it, it was a bit sort of daunting. It's kind of like, well, at the same time, very freeing. So it was like, I literally just have to write a book somehow. And I guess that's how I'll do it. And yeah, so after uni, I kind of took writing a bit more seriously. And I was working in other jobs, but I was kind of writing on the side. And I was writing in the evenings and on the weekends and stuff. And then I wrote The Water Cure while I was working full time. And then I went freelance after that. So I kind of went like gradually into writing as a career. Yeah, starting from kind of my free time to then kind of more part-time. And now I'm writing full-time, which is really bizarre.
Has your process changed quite a lot then? I mean, presumably in terms of time management, it's quite different from having to snatch a bit of time to write outside of a shift at work to having the whole day ahead of you. But has your process to how you start a new project, is it different now having more time?
I think some things are different and some things are the same. I'm actually really surprised at how, like, I don't know, how not non-productive, but how I was often sometimes more productive when there was a bit of like a time constraint, I think, because having to kind of sit down and think, okay, I've got literally 1 hour, whereas now if I've got the whole day, it's suddenly like, you know, 4 hours can pass that I've kind of haven't done as much. So it's weird. And I think part of that is kind of maybe getting used to writing or working one way, but also another part might just be can't really rush writing so much, and I kind of struggled with that a bit. And I think when I went freelance, my first thought was that I'm going to write so many books. I'm going to write like three books a year. It took me a couple of years to write The Water Cure. I could just like really, really cram them out, but it kind of didn't really work like that. Actually, all my books have taken about the same amount of time to write, even though they've been kind of written under different circumstances. So it's been quite interesting to realise that and to think about the role that time takes and the role of kind of not like empty time, but I think like in my job when I was writing The Water Cure, there was a lot of like spreadsheets and zoning into the middle distance a little bit and kind of admin tasks that let me have a lot of thinking time. And I kind of miss the thinking time a bit now because it's kind of, I don't have so much of that busy work to let my brain go off and think about things.
So do you have to try and manufacture thinking time in a slightly more artificial way?
Yeah. Pull up some spreadsheets and just
I do a lot of housework. I actually go for lots of walks in Epping Forest and kind of long bus journeys and things. I think just acknowledging it is always kind of part of the battle, because I always thought that time wasn't writing time, but I kind of have to refigure, I guess, what I think writing time is. And it's a lot like not just kind of putting the words on the page, but a lot of the stuff around that when kind of good ideas or little associations and stuff come to me.
And so when you're starting a project, do you have, is it more of a process as you write, you need to sort of alternate between writing and thinking over a period of time to get to the end result, rather than sort of thinking up the idea before putting pen to paper at all and then just writing it out?
It's a bit both. I like planning things out in advance because otherwise I find it just really intimidating. And I think the first time I tried to write a novel, I think I got like 10,000 words into it and then I just completely lost steam because I didn't know where it was going. So now I kind of try and prevent that by having a bit of a plan. I like going on tangents and stuff, and I always find that usually a tangent I've gone off on ends up becoming the book, and it's really annoying and kind of quite unpredictable. But yeah, I guess being aware of that, it's interesting because I'm like 3 books in now, so I'm kind of only now feel like I'm getting some kind of handle on my process, and I bet like when I write another book it'll be completely different or it'll be a bit different and it'll be quite annoying.
So you're working on the third at the moment. Are you in the writing process as we speak?
Yeah, I am. I'm trying to kind of get a routine going. I've just moved house, so I'm kind of everything's a bit kind of all over the place. And I find I really like having a routine, and if I don't have a routine, it's hard to get back into one. So kind of trying to figure out a new routine.
Is that a routine in terms of your day in general, or a routine in terms of your writing when you're sat at the desk writing?
I think a bit of both. I tend to like write quite early in the morning, which is nice, and I haven't been doing much of that. And obviously last year was so strange with the pandemic and still kind of ongoing, and so there's been a lot more time to, I guess, indulge in a routine and to be just like at home and to kind of sit at a desk, and now to kind of have other things going on feels quite strange. But yeah, I'm not like one of those writers who needs everything to be like absolutely perfect. I think it's just more about getting into that brain space, so I know that I'm sitting down and doing something consistently. I can kind of write anywhere if I'm in that correct brain space, but yeah, I'm trying to get into that zone, I guess. But yeah, I'm definitely settling into it a bit more.
When you do come, so like in the morning when you sort of sit down to write, do you tend to sort of just start from where you got to the previous day, or do you have a process to sort of get into the brain space, or rereading what you did the previous day, or working with a plan or something of what you're going to do that day?
Yeah, I think my ideal kind of start is basically get up and I listen to a playlist. I always have like a playlist for book I'm working on, so I kind of listen to some of the songs to get me in that space, and I'll usually read back a little bit of what I did the previous day, but maybe not too much because otherwise I might want to edit it. And I try not to kind of go back too much if I'm not like editing, if I'm in the kind of writing space, because I feel like I can just get distracted and I'll just go over the same paragraph again and again. So I try and like go forward. But yeah, having music is really important to me, and I think kind of waking up and trying to get on with it immediately, because otherwise, like today, for example, I got up and I kind of got distracted by washing my sink. Extremely thrilling stuff. And it kind of like broke the spell a little bit. And then the rest of the day kind of happened. And so having like those, I think it's like a hangover from when I was writing before work. And I used to love just getting up and getting my coffee and again, listening to the playlist and feeling like, oh, like no one else in the world is awake. This is amazing. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write for like an hour or two and it's going to be great. And yeah, trying to kind of hang on to that kind of sense of magic, I guess.
So that's how you did it when you were writing The Water Cure while working full time. You would get up before work and get your writing done.
Yes.
What sort of time were you getting up to do that?
Usually about before five, if I can manage it. I'm quite like a morning person anyway. I'm very, very like irritating like that. I think I kind of made myself into a morning person a bit more. Yeah, it was just like the only kind of time I really knew that I could carve out. And I mean, I was in my 20s and I was having like quite a lot of fun in London, and I didn't really want to sacrifice my evenings too much. So I did sacrifice a few, but yeah, the morning was always like quite a good time for me. But I think it's really hard because I know people are like, oh, get up and like make time and stuff. And I would never say that to anyone really, because some people just don't work well in the morning and some people have children. And Some people, you know, there's like lots of other responsibilities people have. You might have a job which is really draining, and my job was not very draining. I had a really nice job that was quite easy, and my colleagues are really, really nice and actually really supportive of me writing. Not enough to kind of, you know, they wouldn't have let me be very tired at work all the time, but they were like, oh, it's like really cool that you've been up for like 3 hours already and you're on your like seventh coffee. Like, yeah, it's kind of cool.
Were you open with them that you were writing a novel at the time? That's why you were getting up?
Or? I was really close to my manager, so he was really encouraging. The thing is, like, I didn't think that I was ever going to leave the job anyway, because I was kind of realistic about, you know, writing and kind of what a book deal entails. And so I kind of just assumed that that was what I was going to do my whole life. Not that job specifically, but I was kind of like made my peace with the idea that writing was going to be kind of my hobby. So it was quite like a nice surprise when I could go freelance.
Yeah, so we've been talking about sort of a bit recently the idea. I think hobby is a problematic word, but the idea that the writing is the real work, but not for everyone can that pay the bills. Actually, for a very small minority can that pay the bills. So how much you sort of tie your cart to the horse of just paying the bills and having a less fulfilling career, but thinking like, well, you know, at least I can write without having to take it home. The concept of reconciling yourself to, yeah, having a job that pays the bills, as it were, to give yourself the space to write.
Did it change quite quickly for you from working there to sort of having a book deal? Was it a quick process from sort of sending it out to getting signed and
I think
being able to leave the job? Or
I had a lot of, throughout my 20s, I think, because I mean, I was writing, I was working on Watercure for a couple of years, and I was writing another book before then. So I mean, I kind of spent my whole 20s writing while doing other jobs, and my job before my nice job wasn't a very nice job at all. It was like super draining and very extreme, like tech bro startup culture. And I could not tell anyone that was writing a book there, because it would have been like incredibly disapproving and thought it wouldn't have shown my commitment to the career or whatever. So I had a lot of moments where I was kind of like, maybe I could have done a lot better in a different, you know, I could have done a different job and be doing really well. I could be, I don't know, on a graduate scheme, or I could be, at one point I was like, maybe I should be a lawyer and I should do a law conversion. and my partner was a bit like, I don't think you'd be very good at that. And I was like, I don't think I would. So yeah, kind of that kind of reconciliation between what work to do and, you know, how much am I kind of going to sacrifice for writing in a way, and how much, I don't know, it was kind of scary to think that there's so much uncertainty around it, and having to just kind of believe in myself it's so cheesy, but it was difficult. And yeah, it did happen quite fast, like when I actually got the deal. And yeah, I think it happened over like basically spring and summer, and it kind of went out and it sold at auction. It sold quite fast, and so things kind of changed quite rapidly. And then I started to think, well, actually, you know, maybe I could go freelance, and then I would have a bit more time to work on the next book. And I wasn't kind of ready to completely go full time, and I couldn't have done it anyway. But I still wanted to kind of, I guess, be realistic about it. I've tried to be realistic throughout every stage as much as I can be, and yeah, that's why it still kind of feels so weird to me now that, you know, I kind of, writing is my main job, and I do teach and do kind of other writing commissions, but like, yeah, it's strange because it happens quite gradually.
And do you find it different, like when you're working on commissions, like, as opposed to writing the next novel? Are they sort of different parts of your brain working on those sort of different projects, or is it all kind of the same in terms of?
Yeah, it's weird, because I feel like if I'm doing a nonfiction commission, I feel like my nonfiction voice is more kind of just like my normal voice and not like my fiction voice, which is a bit weird and kind of dark. And I'm quite like cheerful, and my books are quite like not cheerful. So it does operate on a different part of my brain, I think. I guess just like, yeah, just thinking kind of differently. I'm not really worried about something being beautiful so much. Obviously, if it's like a fiction commission, it's different. And yeah, it kind of depends what kind of commission it is, I guess. I've done some kind of more corporate stuff over the years, and it's always kind of interesting to, I guess, because my old job was in marketing and kind of branding. So to return a little bit to that space, and my old job was kind of a lot of writing, because I used to, run a blog for my job, but it was very much, yeah, in a completely kind of different area. It was all about how to start a small business and kind of tax and financial stuff. And yeah, so a lot less kind of creative, but still a writing skill.
And you mentioned that you try to not edit as you go along, or limit that to as much as you can to sort of move on to the next section that you're writing. But do you have an editing process? Sort of, what do you wait until you've finished the first draft, or at the end of a chapter, or how do you sort of go back and revisit work when it's still in process?
So I tend to do a first draft, like a really, really bad first draft, as fast as I can. It's kind of not even a first draft, it's more like draft zero, because it's just awful. And then I will kind of basically just rewrite that one completely, and that usually is my first workable draft, actual draft one. And I think the first one, that draft zero, is just kind of me, I don't know, almost like having a bet with myself where I'm like, you can't do it, you can't write another book, and I'm like, yes I can, and just bashing out as many words as I can and trying to kind of get, I guess, as many ideas out as I can, and just see if it has, not see if it has legs, but, you know, kind of just get something there, and then yeah, make it a bit better. And from that draft, then I think basically I'm not very good at, I'm more good at doing the writing than thinking about it. So when it comes to editing, I'm more of a doer than a kind of going over one thing again and again. Like I'll rewrite something a lot, and I will do a lot of drafts. So it's not as simple for me as kind of writing something and then just sort of making that a bit better and not really making any changes. I will kind of change everything, unfortunately. But again, I think that's just how I work, and I've kind of made my peace with it now, even though it feels like incredibly inefficient.
So when you say change everything, is that, I mean, could that involve sort of getting rid of half of the first of draft zero or half draft one and rewriting a whole new ending or a whole new beginning, or would it not be that drastic?
Sometimes even more drastic. Like, yeah, I'll definitely change voices and point of view, I'll change narrators, I might change settings. I think with the Water Cure, yeah, I originally had it on an oil rig, and then it was changed to an island, and I think I only had one voice narrating it, and like the ages were different, and yeah, the kind of the backstory, like everything was different basically, except for the kind of, they had the core relationship of the sisters and the kind of conflict of men coming from the outside world. Those are the kind of the two things that I kept, and everything else changed a bit. Yeah, voices one and point of view I changed, and tense is point of view and narration is one I tend to change a lot, because I just think sometimes I'm not really sure how best to tell the story when it comes down to the first draft, and it's kind of more about the actual story, and then when I've got the actual story, I'm like, hey, maybe it'd be kind of better if someone else told it.
That I can imagine that's quite difficult to change, like it's almost rewriting the whole thing, for depending on the nature of the change. But you know, something changing oil rig, you can almost do, you know, find and replace in a document, and it's probably, you know, not necessarily going to change anything surrounding it, but as soon as you start changing the voice or points of view, that's the thing, suddenly everything else, or from my experience, everything else unravels, and you have a section, you think, oh, that section really works, it's good, but now it doesn't work because I've changed something over here. But yeah, from my experience at editing stuff like that, I almost have a hesitation to do that sometimes, just because of the headache I can foresee coming. So it's quite brave to radically change stuff like that. I mean, do you have that hesitation as well, or is it when you're changing something like the voice? You start on one section where you feel the voice is wrong and change it there, and then sort of move on, and if that new voice is working better, just sort of rewrite all the following sections or all the sections surrounding it.
Yeah, I'll definitely try it out, because sometimes I think, yeah, it needs a new voice, but again, that hesitation, I'm not just gonna write the I can't just rewrite the whole thing unless I know if it's actually gonna work. So it's almost like, I don't know, trying some things out. And that's less daunting than doing the whole thing. And I think it was like, I was actually quite far into like the drafting process with the water cure. I think it was like about 3 months or 4 months before he sent it out, when I suddenly had the idea that it needed to be in present tense, and it was all written in past tense, and I was a bit like, no, come on, are you sure you want to do this? And I was like, yeah, I think it needs it. And part of my brain that was like, no, do you really want to rewrite like 70,000 words in a different tense? You're quite close to the end. And the other part of me was like, but what if actually this is what it needs? And then I kind of did that experimenting where I wrote a bit in the present tense. And I was like, oh yeah, it just makes it better. Like, it makes it come alive, it makes it more present, and it's kind of what it's been missing. And I think having that honesty with myself and kind of having to make those really irritating decisions is kind of important to my process, and just, yeah, I guess not being afraid to do it. But I think I wouldn't have done very well in like the olden days where I had to write on a typewriter, and I just got through. Like, at least now I'm like, okay, I can just like copy and paste, that I can move things around, and I can delete things, but I can like put them in a document called Cut Bits that I'll never use ever again. I'm kind of a bit more like less precious with it than I used to be, but it's tough. But I think making a decision like that where it's really hard, at least you know that it's definitely good for the book, because you wouldn't make it if it was an easy decision. Mm.
Is it normally quite obvious, like when you sort of rewrite a section, it was in the past tense, you rewrite it in the present tense, do you kind of finish writing that section and go, I just kind of know this is the way it's going to go? Or do you then sit with two competing, the present tense version and the past tense version sitting on the computer, and days passed with the two battling in your head as you go for a walk, or like, is it better or not? And like, is it a difficult decision, do you find, to make those changes? Or once you've done the experiment and tried changing it, is it normally quite obvious the way that you should go?
Yeah, normally it does become quite obvious, but I think I ask myself a lot, like, what am I actually trying to do? Because I think as time has gone on, I've just got a bit more, I guess, aware of what I'm trying to do, and a bit more analytical in my approach, which, like, it seems really unromantic, but I think it makes it a bit easier for me to kind of, I guess, have more of a, I think with watercolor is, I was kind of analytical a bit, but I didn't really fully grasp what I was doing. I was like, oh, I'm writing a book, this is wonderful. And now I'm like, okay, like, I have more of a handle, you've done this before, what are you doing here? Like, actually, what is this going to add by changing the tense? Like, what are you actually trying to do? Just trying to kind of understand it a bit, I guess. And yeah, kind of having more ownership over my decisions, I think, and having kind of just more sense of what I'm doing, because I felt completely clueless by comparison when I was writing The Water Cure. So sometimes when I'm just like, I think on the book I'm writing now, like in the draft zero, it was written all in like one person's voice and like the main character, and I was just like, oh, it's kind of just not really alive, it's just not really working for me. And then I was like, what if someone else told it? And then yeah, I started telling the same story through someone else who's kind of got a bit of a different perspective on the main character, because the main character just wasn't that interesting. And having that conversation with myself as well, I was like, she's not actually that interesting if she's just thinking about herself. Like, but what if someone else is thinking about her? Then suddenly she becomes interesting, because there's like someone else involved who's projecting this stuff. And yeah, it's kind of like fun figuring those things out.
So, and have you made that decision between, I feel bad calling it draft zero, because I think that's kind of exactly the same sort of way that a lot of people do write. And it feels like all the work that you put into it then is slightly different. But anyway, that decision, was that between draft zero and starting on what was the first full draft in earnest? Or was it while you were working on draft zero? I mean, did you need some perspective to take a step back from the initial ideas, I guess, to make that decision? Or was it nagging at you while you were working on the draft series?
Yeah, I needed a bit of perspective. So I wrote whole draft in that voice. And it was when I took a step back, then I realized it needed to be different. Yeah, I think during halfway through, I realized it probably wasn't going to work, but I wanted to just kind of see it through and see. But I think when I started kind of getting really bored in the middle of draft zero, and it's not a good place to be. But I always feel like with draft zero or first draft, you know, I should feel really excited, maybe not all the time, but I should be kind of like, oh, this is like this is the bit where I'm kind of least hard on myself, and I'm just, you know, giving myself permission to write whatever and having some fun with it, really, and trying things out. And if I'm not having fun with it, then it's like, well, yeah, something's not quite right here. Like, something is not as good as it could be.
We haven't really discussed with people what the part they find most enjoyable, the section, because I wonder if that holds for a lot of others, like whether the early drafts, I know what you mean, like your enthusiasm should be highest maybe, but people might feel that because there's so much that's unknown about it, that's quite a that can be quite a disorientating time, or to keep the motivation and the belief up could be quite difficult.
I don't even know if the first draft is the bit I enjoy the most, kind of in the sense of enjoy. I think because there's also much in the air, up in the air, and it's kind of, there's always that fear that I can't do it or it's going to be awful. I think it's kind of a cop out, but I quite like the end where it's almost done. And it's like, you're quite like a lot of edits in, and you're like, this is actually quite good. This is all right. and it just feels quite pleasant because you're like just finishing it off, giving the last little bits, and you kind of forget all the bad bits, and you're just like, this is lovely. I've made a book. Well done, me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Unsound Methods. We hope you're enjoying the show. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Unsound Methods or view our website at unsoundmethods.co.uk. So now that you're doing this full time, and obviously with the deal you have, when are you bringing other people in to start looking at it and start offering their views?
I usually send it to my agent quite early on. I think I'm a bit of an outlier in the sense that I don't have that many kind of early readers. And that's just because I don't know, I just don't really want to send my book to people. Not in a way that I don't want people to read it, but I just feel a bit like, oh, sorry for sending you my terrible book. I think I want to kind of get maybe a bit more friends involved, or kind of, writing circle or something involved next time, because it does get a bit lonely. But then I have my agent, who is like one of my best friends as well, and she is just amazing, and I trust her taste so much, and I trust her to be like brutally honest with me as well. So I usually send to whatever I have like quite early on, and that's kind of quite encouraging.
And does that at the stage you send it, does she send back a lot of changes that ultimately you end up making big changes to the book, or is it more sort of general comments, or like how much is that feedback sort of impact what you do next in terms of writing?
Yeah, kind of just depends what stage it's at. Usually suggestions, like she kind of won't give me lots of kind of edits until maybe it's a bit further along. But I think with The Water Cure, because we worked really closely on The Water Cure, so I guess it was my first book, and kind of wanted to get it so good before it went out to editors. But now it's a bit more hands off, I guess, because I like have more of a handle on things, and also because I'll work with my editor at some point. So but yeah, more like suggestions, but his suggestions are always great. So yeah. It's always like, yeah, so no, I think that's why I think I need to like send my work to more people earlier on, because it's really so useful to have another perspective, and especially when you're just kind of so close to it and you can't really see it anymore, and you know, cycle through 10 emotions in a day, like start working on it in the morning and be like, oh, this is good actually, and then by the end of the day be like, this is awful, I'm gonna start another book. I'm putting this in the bin. Having a little bit of perspective is so useful.
How much do you have any conversation before starting at all? Do you sort of say, I'm thinking to write this book, and that sort of very broad outline of it, or is that the first anyone knows that you're writing the topics of that book when you send it to your agent?
I will kind of talk about it in broad terms. I think like with my current book, I remember being like, okay, it's kind of got an idea and it's like a bit historical. And she was like, right, okay, you're writing a historical novel. And I was like, yes, but like, trust me, it's going to still be weird. It's not like, yeah, it's not kind of historical. And she was like, okay, well, you know, I trust you, and you know, go off and write your book.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty general. You're not sort of like, well, I'm thinking there's going to be this character in this situation, and this is roughly the book's going to be set in this time and this and this and this and this and this is going to happen. And then you have a sort of conversation about that before starting on it. It's, I mean, you just sort of have those ideas, I guess, in your head, and then sit down and open the computer one day and.
I think if it's like, if it, I don't know, I probably went a bit more detailed with her. Yeah, obviously I don't want to kind of, sometimes when I describe an idea for a book, it can just sound, I know it sounds weird, but like I can do it well. I feel like I can execute it better than explain it sometimes. So I kind of don't want to like talk about it too much with people in case they're like, well, that sounds dreadful. No, but I know I can do it. I promise.
Wait, at what point does it, I mean, is there a point where the idea of the novel sort of crystallizes and you feel, okay, this is what I'm going to write? Or is it only by the end of draft one that you're like, okay, this is what the book's about? I mean, before sort of starting a new project, how much planning do you do, and what, you know, what is the form of that? Is it just sort of ideas floating around in your head and think, oh, those things could be good, but let's write something and see how it goes? Or do you have a sort of one page outline written down somewhere, or somewhere in between? I don't know.
Yeah, I always have a outline, like a synopsis that I do beforehand, just to kind of, I guess, again, I don't know, I always think of it as like a very tiny book, and it kind of gives me that first feeling of like, yes, I can actually do it, because, you know, I've written down what happens, and then I kind of write down what will happen with the full knowledge that it's probably going to end up really different and those things might not actually happen, but it still gives me something to work from at the beginning. But yeah, I don't know, every book I've gone into thinking that I know what it's about, and I just end up realizing that I don't know what it's about, it's about something else. And that's why I think I do a lot of drafts. It's almost like every draft is like unwrapping a layer or something and kind of getting a bit closer to what it actually is. And again, it's annoying because it's really, really good to just know off the bat like what I'm actually writing about. But I think, I don't know, so much about writing, I think, is kind of tricking yourself a bit and tricking yourself into getting the words down and tricking yourself into, I don't know, writing about what you really want to write about and writing about the difficult stuff. And so it's kind of just finding that way into it, where I can sort of get into that place where I'm like, oh, suddenly I realize I thought I was writing about this, but I'm actually writing about this, which is
Right
about like a bigger and more terrifying thing. But I'm there now, so I might as well kind of keep doing it.
Yeah, I think that's so true. That I like what you were saying earlier about getting into the sort of brain space of writing it. There's, you kind of get it when you can get into the right flow and just write, then it's what comes out is, yeah, not, if it's good, it's good, but it's not necessarily related to what you thought you were going to be doing 5 minutes before.
Sometimes it's a sentence and I'm like, well, there it is. That's what I'm writing about. I've clarified it for myself. Great. But like, I can't believe it's just happened now on like draft five. Like, why?
But yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting, the synopsis, like writing a synopsis beforehand, which I people we've spoken to, there's all from people who won't take any notes, won't write anything down, just pen on paper, chapter one, sentence one, go. And, you know, people that have, you know, whiteboards and post-it notes and bits of string and stuff.
But in between, I just find it really intimidating to have no plan at all. I just, you know, just, it's terrifying. And at least if I could kind of look to my plan and think, well, this thing's supposed to happen next vaguely, so do that.
And would you spend a lot of time on that synopsis? Is it something you're like, right, well, I've got these ideas, quickly put a synopsis together, it's because I know it's not going to be anything close to what the end result is? Or do you sort of spend 3 months refining the synopsis until you're like, okay, I think this is ready to go, I'm going to actually start draft zero?
No, I won't spend that long on it. And I will actually, I think for my current book in progress, I have like 7 synopsises, because every time I wanted to change something big, I would kind of try it out in the synopsis first, I guess, to sort of see how it felt, and yeah, try it out a bit. Yes, 7 different synopsises, which all are slightly different.
So you're updating the synopsis as you go along.
Yeah.
Like with each draft, you're going back to the synopsis, and then updating that to match what's happened in the draft.
Yeah, to kind of to kind of keep track. Yeah, again, like it's like kind of the novel in miniature, because I find it quite hard that you can't see the whole book. You know, you have to read it and absorb it. It's kind of if it was like
a- I mean, that's a I don't think we've spoken to anyone that's had that approach, but it makes so much sense, because personally, writing a synopsis, I've only ever done it at the end, and I find it, I think a lot of authors also find it a real headache to, having finished it, like, how do I get this into a page, or how do I, you know, how do I write this synopsis?
It's so interesting, because I always thought of it as a headache. I always thought of it as like, this is like, you know, it's useful and kind of, I don't know, comforting in a way, because it's like, well, here's the book, like, here it is. It's like I've written it. I just have to actually now write it. Sort of doing it in reverse instead of distilling it. It's almost like bringing it into being somehow.
I guess it's difficult at the end, and this is the problem you'll never have had, having done it all the way along and modified it, because you don't know the weighting to give to certain things. In terms of the plot and how you lay it out and the significance that they should have relative to each other in an obvious way, I guess, because you've been so close to it. In my opinion, that might be why it's so horrible a thing to do at the end, when you need to summarize it before you send it off to people.
Yeah, there's that temptation of like, oh, I need to include this as well. Like, I can't not have that in the synopsis, but then it starts mushrooming into longer and longer. Okay, well, maybe I don't need that, but now it's not... The synopsis isn't explaining things, because I've missed out something that needs to be there.
Yeah.
I think it's my books are, maybe it's like a, as well, kind of a practical thing. So my books are really short. Not like really short, but they're kind of, I don't know, I'm like, they're easy to sum up. So I can just kind of do that. Maybe one day I'll write like an actual book that is kind of complicated, and I will be like, okay, I hate synopsis, and I see why.
There's some books for which it would be really difficult. I remember hearing about some people saying, I'm sure it was a joke, but this sort of parlor game they played about explain the plot of Gravity's Rainbow and things like that. It's like, yeah, that is going to be pretty difficult to really write a nice, succinct
one-page synopsis. Trying to write a synopsis of like Infinite Jest or something. It's like, yeah, it would not be pleasant.
do you find that as you're sort of mirroring the plot in the synopsis, you know, as you're going back and updating the synopsis, does that then trigger anything to change in the draft or in the next draft? Like, as you sort of reshape the synopsis, you think, oh, actually, now reading this one page, this has given me a different perspective on the book as a whole. So when I go back to do draft three, I'm going to change something.
Yeah, I guess because sometimes it kind of gives me a bit of a neat solution, because I'm kind of like, I need to make it, again, it's that kind of idea of distilling it, because I'm like, this happens, and this happens, and then this happens. And I'm like, well, how did that get from there to there? There needs to be like something there, or, you know, why did this happen? I think it makes me think about problems that are going to come up before they come up, and then I kind of can hopefully try and solve them before they come up. And if there's any, I don't know, I'm quite bad for... You know, if something comes up that is a problem, just wanting to ignore it a bit and be like, it's fine, it's going to work itself out. And it's like, no, it's not going to work itself out. I have to work it out. I'm the author and it's an issue and it's not going to go away. So kind of like making me think about that quite early on is useful as well.
Do you ever rely on your kind of intuition to work something out? You never just leave something and think, well... Next time I come to the next draft, I suppose if it was a more minor thing, you think, oh, that's the thing that at 2 a.m. it'll suddenly pop into my brain and I'll go, oh, that's...
Yeah, no, that definitely does happen. Like sometimes if I just think about it all the time, and I always have like, I've got a little notes, or it's not like very romantic, but I've got a little notes thing on my phone for each book, and yeah, any idea I'll kind of put in there. And if I'm thinking about it all the time, sometimes things will kind of just, yeah, work themselves out. But I think as well, something I found with Blue Ticket, my second novel, was like, often my editor would kind of be like, oh, you know, or even a reader would be like, oh, she's done something which is like very irrational. And I'm like, it doesn't seem irrational to me. I was like, sometimes I think what gets in the way is like my kind of understanding of human behavior, which is like, we're all very, very kind of irrational creatures who act like not always in our best interests. And so something that doesn't seem very logical might seem like completely fine to me, and having to kind of make those adjustments.
I mean, that's an interesting criticism, isn't it? Because there's so much of like just factual history and stuff that you would think is down to people behaving in a completely irrational way. I mean, it just, your lived experience should surely show you that it's how people are.
Like, yeah, why is this character's motivation this? I'm like, I don't know, like, she just wants to do it. So she's going to do it, I guess.
Yeah, it is strange. I think it's a different frame when people read a book. Just naturally, there's, you know, things are distilled in a way that don't happen in the real world. And I'm sure a lot of readers that would, you know, say, oh, that character is not acting rationally. Seeing exactly the same actions in the real world, it's, they're not even thinking about that. There's something happens when you get into a book that, in one sense, you're kind of divorced from a sort of analysis of things. You're not having to worry about the mechanics of stuff, or you're not worrying about your job or anything. You're just reading a book, and it's escapism. But on the other hand, a sort of analytical part of your brain picks up and starts going, oh, they shouldn't be doing this, they shouldn't be doing that, or I don't know, which is, I guess, as an author, you kind of battle against that to make a plot that make characters that are believable, but
yeah,
equally there's no I don't think there's any resolution to it. I just find it interesting that the difference of how people judge characters in a book compared with characters in the real world.
Yeah, it's almost like we forgive like kind of real people acting on impulse more or something. And maybe in a book, because it's just there on the page. Yeah, obviously, we can suspend our disbelief really far, like for things like fantasy, but sometimes can't suspend it far enough for like something that's quite everyday. Yeah, so always trying to like find that balance between, yeah, kind of, I guess, not kind of spoon feeding the reader too much and having that kind of ambiguity, I guess, and sense of, yeah, suspending of the disbelief, but also try to figure it out so that the reader doesn't get really annoyed.
I guess with things like them, say the rationality or irrationality of a character, if it's sort of in the abstract, if they're just saying, oh, this character I don't believe, that's a weird criticism. It's when it becomes, I guess, a fair comment if it's within the realm of the book that you've created and the character you've created. If it suddenly becomes completely inconsistent, then maybe that's fair enough. Yeah. But yeah, it just seems odd that you think of the sort of 7 billion different personalities that genuinely do exist in the world.
I always struggle with knowing like how much to kind of, I don't know, explain about a character and the motivations. And I think because, especially in Blue Ticket, like it's so much in the brain of the character, like it's super interior. And then I kind of forget that even though we are like kind of in her brain isn't necessarily always explained. And so when she's doing like really, she's making like terrible decisions, or there's no sense of urgency, and readers are just like, why is she doing this? Like, why isn't she kind of like single-mindedly focused on like her escape and this kind of survival? And I'm like, well, actually, I'm sure if you were in a very stressful situation that didn't feel completely real, you probably would do, you know, kind of bizarre things as well. I just kind of wouldn't want to pretend it was happening. And I was like, actually, maybe I should have like put that in. Maybe I should have kind of explained that.
So that's the thing you say about not wanting to sort of spoon feed the reader and to just set it up so it just looks like it's on rails and it's just going.
Kind of wanted to feel inevitably.
You mentioned you have notes on your phone, and for like the project you're working on, I guess. Do you have other projects? Do you tend to have sort of multiple novels sort of ready to go, or in the wings, or are you quite sort of single-minded on the novel you're working on at the time, and then all thoughts are focused on that until it's finished, and then start thinking about what's next?
Yeah, I try and be single-minded, but I will usually have like another document of kind of like notes the next thing, maybe. It depends, like it's not always the next thing, but at the moment there is like, I have like a vague next thing, but I don't really know what it's going to be, which is kind of the nicest, because it's like, well, I'm focusing on the novel anyway, I don't actually need to know what the next thing is anyway. But occasionally kind of making some notes towards something that is still kind of figuring out its shape is quite nice, kind of compromise between the two, I guess. And I don't know, I think I'm always worried with working on two books at the same time is whether they kind of like end up in competition with each other and kind of steal ideas from the other. But this is kind of feels quite different from the book I'm working on now. So they kind of are not stealing from each other. Otherwise, I probably have to be like, just don't think about it for now. I literally put all your energy in this. And like, all my energy is in the new book anyway. But I think, again, it's one of those things where sometimes when you're not really thinking about it properly, or you're doing something else and your brain's in a different place, that you kind of have an idea or something useful. So I kind of try and stay alert to anything that could be useful for future things. So I don't give this in and think, what do you know? I'm always afraid of like not having another idea. I'm like, what if I've only got one book in me, and then it's like, what if I've only got two books, and now it's like, you know, maybe I've already got three. I don't know. Maybe I've got loads.
I bet that's really common. I bet we could speak to people who've written like 20 novels, and they would, some of them at least, would still say, yeah, that's the worry. Is there one more? You just don't know.
But also, like, you know, what if they keep getting worse and worse? That's my fear as well. Not that I think that my second is worse than my first, or my third is worse than my second. They're just different. But, you know, I'm always like, what if they do just, you know, what if it is just diminishing returns? But can't really think about that too much, or...
It's such a subjective thing. You can either think about it or not. But if you're going to think about it, there's no end to where.
It's like the Ian McEwan effect. Like, I love The Cement Garden so much, and then I feel bad saying
that. No, I get exactly.
He's not going to hear me like, being mean about him. I'm not being mean about him. But yeah, that kind of idea, I guess, of books kind of really changing and becoming so different. I mean, change is good, and it's to find new readers and stuff. But
yeah, it, like, Ian McEwan is quite a unique kind of... The Cement Garden is so... Well, to me, it seems so different from all his other work. And he's published so many novels, and not that his other stuff is so bad, but it's not anywhere in the same ballpark as Cement Garden for me anyway. But
yeah, I love.
I don't see you sort of diminished as much as just written Cement Garden and then gone off to a different career almost.
Yeah. I'm imagining myself like 20 years in the future, and I'm writing like cozy mysteries, and I don't want that to happen. But you know,
is there a difficulty there with the commercial pressures, as much as you want and you feel, you know, you've got a publisher that's very supportive of what you're doing creatively, but if they particularly if you have an early book that's really sort of beloved, and then you know that you choose to do something else because you need that creative nourishment, and people sort of be upset with you and think, oh, you know, why are you going off and writing this completely different stuff 5 books after the one that I really liked? And it sort of puts that's, I guess, when people are starting out, that's a pressure that you're never going to consider, is it?
So you can't really win. If you write their second book or whatever that's the same as your first, then you're kind of not branching out at all, and then it's always like fun to be trying new stuff. And I think like any book you write is never going to be like your first, really, because I mean, there's just so much that goes into first book, and there's so much you don't know, and there's just so much that you, I know, it's just I think I have rose tinted glasses a bit about it, because I just remember I know that there were times it was awful writing Water Cure, and I was exhausted and I was fed up and I wanted to like stop it all and just like never write another word again. And then I kind of remember the times of like the early mornings, and it was really exciting, and I had this big secret, just me against the world, and you know, there was no pressure, it was just, you know, kind of very romantic and stealing away and finding time, and but I'm like, kind of probably wasn't like that at all. But in my memories, I'm like, remember how great it was, that first pure novel.
It might be like a lot of those things in life that take a lot of work. Like, if you could actually remember accurately how difficult it was in the really difficult times, you wouldn't want to do it again. So your brain insulates you from that.
Yeah, like childhood.
I would imagine. But that's that thing about repeat or people having favourites as well. I think there was it may be Scroobius Pip or someone, a musician, who was saying when people come up to you and when you've got a new album out and they're like, oh, it's not as good as the last one. And he's like, That still exists. That's still there. You can go and listen to it. You know, it's fine. Yeah, you need that creative freedom to go off and try different things.
Yeah, strange is kind of like, I guess, the kind of ownership. You kind of, that's what I like about. Well, that's what I like about kind of having readers as well. It's just that idea of, you know, you've put this thing into the world and they've got this opinion on it, and if you're lucky, it's a good opinion, and people kind of can really take to it and really make it something else through their own experience of it. And I find that kind of really magical. And so I can't feel bad if people are like, oh, I preferred the water cure. I'm like, well, you like the water cure. That's what I'm taking on.
Yeah. This is when they come up with criticism. I mean, do people ever get in touch and just sort of tell you things about characters, for example, that you've got in their eyes wrong? Or have you never had to sort of deal with that?
I've been really lucky that people have never really like told me directly. I think maybe sometimes in like reviews or on social media. Yeah, I think I was going to, there was a phase where on Instagram, because I kind of use Instagram just for like personal use anyway, and then I would get people kind of tagging me being like, I hated this book, and I'm like, well, this is bizarre. Like, normally, like, can you not kind of like poke me and say, hey, I didn't like a book. Like, I don't mind if you didn't like it. Like, it's fine. You're allowed to not like it, but you don't have to tell me. So that, I think that idea of like people actually telling you they didn't like it is weird.
It's a strange setup, isn't it? That like it wouldn't happen in the real world that people would, you know, they might say, I didn't like this book in conversation with some friends, or they might even say it in conversation with some friends with you there, but they wouldn't sort of run down the street, knock on your door and say, I didn't like this book, by the way.
Yeah, it's a strange one. Like, again, like, I'm a lot better with criticism than I used to be. I think with the water cure, it was also new and so raw. And I was kind of, I guess, exposed a lot more with the whole book of stuff. So it was just like, whoa, I am not prepared for this. And now I'm just like, yeah, people are not always going to like your book. And that's absolutely fine. Just whatever.
Did anyone sort of reach out to help you with that? Because obviously that's a lot of exposure to suddenly get. So was there, from your publishers or from other writers, did anybody else try to just guide you through that a bit?
Yeah, I think my publisher was like really supportive. I think, you know, mostly it was just an incredibly positive experience. That any kind of, you know, any criticism that kind of came my way, I thought, well, it's kind of fair game, really, isn't it? It's kind of, you know, it's balanced out. even if it feels a little bit scary, it's still, you know, it's ultimately fine. I tried to just kind of keep perspective on it, but it's quite a lot. It seems like a really weird thing to have happened now, like three years on. Like, yeah, quite bizarre.
And with the one that you're currently working on, you're in the sort of earlier drafts, did you say, at the moment?
Yeah, or still a sort of the writing phase, so yeah, still kind of just getting on with it and trying not to think too much about what's going
to
happen.
And are you trying to do a sort of 7-hour day or, yeah, a normal kind of working week on it? Or are you sort of writing when it fits in for you? Like, you get up in the morning and write, and if you're not feeling it so much, you can go off and do something else.
I write every day. I definitely write every day. It just kind of depends what other work I have on and kind of what other stuff I have on, and I guess, yeah, what my schedule's kind of looking like. And there's been, yeah, the moving house has been just a lot of kind of really boring admin to kind of squish in. But, yeah, kind of, I guess it would be nice to keep to regular hours. But, again, I can always kind of get up at 7 and do a couple of hours. And that's kind of my favourite time at the moment to, again, keep that kind of early morning, no distractions, nothing else happening.
And you strike me as a fairly disciplined person, if you're someone who can get up early every morning to do it. Are you the big thing that a lot of people talk about tripping them up is research, especially in the early days? So do you have definitely writing time, not going on the internet and looking up the origins of words or anything like that? Or are you quite relaxed about just, you know, dipping out, carry on writing a bit?
I literally just deactivated my Twitter account yesterday because I was like, I'm getting nothing done. Not nothing done, but I was like, I need to be more disciplined. So I kept getting distracted. I'm in my study, which has, well, spare room, but it doesn't have very good internet, which is really useful. I'm kind of toggling off my phone right now. So anything I do need to use the internet for, I kind of have to make a decision to use the internet. And otherwise it's so frustrating that it kind of becomes its own little failsafe. So I have these little things which help me. And I have also an app on my phone where it grows trees, and if you use your phone, the trees die, and it's like weirdly motivating because you're kind of like, I don't want to die. it's always interesting, like actually kind of how low the bar is for not distracting yourself, and how an app can actually really be helpful. But yeah, research, I guess, because I'm just kind of making things up. It's been slightly different with writing a historical book. I do have to kind of check things and research a bit, but I've still kind of gone on a kind of, well, I've taken an angle of basically historical speculation where I am still making things up quite a lot and not really working on facts, because I don't know, there are some facts, but it's kind of based on a true story rather than being a faithful kind of rendition of a true story. So that gives me, I think, some kind of permission. And I think with the pandemic as well, because I was going to be doing a lot more research because it's set in France. So I had a residency to go and live in France for a month. And I was kind of going to visit the town where the story that it's based on has happened. And kind of, I guess it would have been more true to the story and more true to what actually took place. But yeah, it's kind of a different book now, which is kind of interesting to think about. I didn't actually get to go to the town or kind of do the research I planned in Paris and stuff. So it's a different book, really.
When did you get to go there, when everything, all the restrictions are lifted? you think you will go there, or you while you're writing the book? I mean, rather than, will you go there?
Go back in October if all is well. So it'll be interesting to kind of, I guess, do some late stage research. Hopefully it won't make me change the whole thing.
Yeah, imagine you don't want to get there in October and go, no, I've got delete everything.
Start again.
So thank you to Sophie for joining us, and thank you to you for listening.
You can find us online in all the usual places, on Twitter at Unsigned Methods, or our website at unsignedmethods.co.uk. And do remember to like, subscribe wherever you find this podcast, if you do indeed like the podcast. We hope you do.
As you'll have heard, Sophie has left Twitter herself, so she doesn't have a Twitter handle at the moment, I believe. She does have a website, which is sophiemackintosh.co.uk, if you want to learn a bit more about her and her writing. You can find out about me and my writing at jamiebatchin.com, or at jamiebatchin on Twitter, or at jamie_batchin on Instagram.
And you can find me and my writing at lachlanbloom.com, or find me on Twitter at lachlanbloom. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.
Cheers.